afternoon. My name is DevOps S. Pumpkins, and you are
part of it.
Thank you. So, actually, my name is Tom McLaughlin. I have a company called Serverless Ops. We're a DevOps transformation AWS serverless advisory company. And I'm here to present to you Serverless Ops. What do we do when the server goes away? Started working with AWS Lambda and serverless about a year and a half ago. And my first experience actually left me with a very uneasy feeling. I had this problem, which essentially boiled down to take some JSON from one API and shove it into another API. And I really didn't feel like spinning up some hosts in AWS and the associated configuration management work, so I went the serverless route. What I did was eliminate a few hours worth of work. And I just focused on the core problem that I was actually trying to solve. Now, I wasn't actually in operations at the time of this project. So what I had just done was also bypass my old operations team that I was a member of. And that reminded me of a particularly rough incident in my career. I was on the technical operations team of a SaaS product company. I had already left one company that told me, we're never doing this DevOps thing here. So, you know, I was at a place and I felt comfortable. You know, I thought I was ahead of the pack. And then finally one day, my then VP of engineering came to me and said, if you don't code, then you're just another IT person. And it was easily the smallest feeling moment in my entire professional career. I was just told that I simply did not belong. There's no happy ending to this story. I left a few months later. I was not going to learn Java anytime soon, and I didn't want to suffer the indignity of being fired because I was somehow no longer qualified for my job. How many of you can relate to this story? How many of you struggled with DevOps transformation? How many of you had friends that struggled? How many of you were in organizations you watched successive bimodal IT reorgs where people were successively left in sad mode while other people around them were picked up to go to awesome mode? You know, as a result of that incident before, I am regularly worried about being replaced or somehow no longer qualified. And when I started looking at serverless, I became concerned about a repeat of my past. And that's how this talk and eventually my company came about. But you really don't care about my sad yet mildly relatable story, do you? In fact, you're here because you want to hear about serverless, right? You want to hear about functions as a service. You want to hear about event-driven architecture. You're like, wow, this sounds so amazing. Why doesn't DevOps S. Pumpkins have a freaking t-shirt cannon like Kimmy Schmidt does? The answer is a t-shirt cannon costs $700 and I couldn't find a place to rent one in Nashville. That's why. What is serverless? These four characteristics are what we often use to classify what is something that is serverless. There's no servers, VMs, or containers to manage or provision. I only pay for the resources that I use. Services scale on their own. My cloud provider has taken care of that work for me. Fault tolerance and availability is built in because my cloud provider has taken care of that for me. And this is functions as a service. Look at this. A request, a message, a state change, an event happens in our infrastructure. And what does it do? It triggers a bit of code. And that code takes some JSON and it shoves it into another API, whether it's a data store, a queue, or some sort of third-party API. And these are things that we can build with serverless architecture. Front-end web applications. That's a content delivery network and an object store. Okay, no Nginx or Apache that I'm maintaining. In that object store, I've got HTML, client-side JavaScript, images, CSS, and I build this delightful front-end web application for my user. Coming on down the line, that weird-looking yellow blocky thing. That is an API gateway. What's an API gateway? Well, I define an HTTP path, and I give it a verb. And I say, if you post some JSON to this endpoint, that code is going to trigger. And it's going to take that JSON, it's going to look at it and go, I'm going to shove it into this data store right here. And that state change on that database gets put onto an event stream where there's another function waiting for it. And it picks that event up and it passes it to something. Something in your that your organization does that in the end produces some sort of value. And this is what it looks like when we ship it to production. It's this giant Rube Goldberg device. And this is what you want to learn more about. And this is what you want me to keep talking about. But I'm not going to stand here and give you a tech talk on serverless. I think that's a waste of your time. If you want a tech talk on serverless, go to YouTube. I mean, you can find a version of this talk from nearly 1 year ago at DevOps Days Nashville that was delivered a block away. It is a tech talk on serverless, and it completely misses the point. Just focusing on the tech alone is how we get, there is no cloud, it's just someone else's computer. If you're treating the cloud just like you treated your data center, and you made no organizational or process changes, you're not making the most out of your cloud adoption. The corollary to today is anytime someone says the word serverless, Mr. Well actually inevitably jumps out of nowhere to remind us, serverless still uses servers. Just focusing on event-driven architecture or functions as a service or arguing over the silly name gets in the way. It gets in the way of us understanding what serverless is and its real effects. We're going to talk about what serverless means to us as operations people. This is why I'm standing here dressed as David Pumpkins ranting at you. Let's start. Get rid of your ops team. And I say that slide here, I've had this slide here to wake people up and pay attention. I say this and I mean this as an operations person too. Everyone has their own definition of DevOps. There are probably more definitions of DevOps in this room than there are people, because most of us can't seem to form some sort of coherent definition of what that word means. But I am on stage, so I feel obligated to add another definition. See, for most of us, this is what we think of as DevOps. We had these two separate functionally aligned teams, and we tore down the silos, and DevOps happened. How many times have you heard tear down the walls between silos in conference talks over the last 6 to 8 years? But this is more like the reality of, say, a product company. These multiple functionally aligned teams that all exist in the service delivery process. All these teams are needed to get something out the door to the user. And yet these teams are all traveling in their own individual paths. They have their own wants, their own needs, their own success criteria that they're judged on. But product engineering organizations started to realize this wasn't very efficient. So they formed feature teams and product pods. We're going to call them value delivery teams. These cross-functional teams aligned around a common business problem or capability, and these people of multiple different skills traveling in the same direction. And it's not okay to call these dev teams, okay? Don't erase the contribution of the PM and the designer. Now, as operations people, we were usually left out of this reorganization. We're over there on the side. We're too busy operating the levers of the infrastructure. If your organization goes with a serverless first mentality, where solutions are assumed to be serverless by default, unless they can't fit that pattern, which organizations are already starting to adopt, that feature team doesn't need you. They don't need to go through you to reach the user. You're not a part of the value delivery process. Your only option is to play toll booth operator, where your role exists as a function of policy, but not actual need. And even then, how are you going to control all the CloudFormation and Terraform in your environment? Okay? Those teams need access. They need access and control just in order to function. So your choice is to remain secluded and potentially bypass, as I feared earlier, or this is how I see the ops team going away. It's leaving our monolithic teams and heading to the feature team. The ops team goes away. The ops people do not. We become a direct part of the value delivery process. And this, to me, is that sort of DevOps promised land that we've been looking for. Okay? DevOps is about how do we deliver greater value and faster to our organizations and our users? How do we deliver more efficiently? So you're on this new team. You're on this value delivery team. What are you going to do? In the serverless world, we have this term we call different ops. What's different ops? Well, picture yourself just climbing up the stack. And as you reach each new level, you're going to look at your old work from a different vantage point, and you're going to look at new work that you're maybe not accustomed to. So this is my server. And I worry about CPU, I worry about disk, I worry about memory. There is a vulnerability announced. And you know how I know that vulnerability is important? It has a logo and a website. And why do I run this server? It's because we need a NoSQL database in our environment. We need Mongo, we're gonna serve up MongoDB. And I need to ensure that MongoDB isn't exploding. There we go. I need to handle the amount of load, so I'm going to need three of them. And I need to ensure that legitimate coworkers can access this service while not legitimate Viking Kitten isn't plundering our data. So then you go serverless. I've replaced MongoDB with an AWS DynamoDB table. That's a lot of empty space right there. That's what used to be my work. That's been taken over by my cloud provider. What am I going to do? Well, I said, we're going to climb up that stack, okay? And we're going to look at DynamoDB from a different vantage point. We're going to look at it as just one service in an entire running system. I care about that database as just a single piece in the greater whole of an application. And not only do I care about my legitimate coworkers and not legitimate Viking Kitten, but I care about my legitimate users. I want them to use this application and be happy. That brings me to the new work that we're going to have to do. You will have to code. I say this as an operations person who got into this profession because I didn't want to be a software developer. But I don't see a way around this. How are you going to explain why that database is failing if you can't understand the code that is triggering that failure? But this is really all serverless code is, okay? I take some JSON from one API and I shove it into another API. We not only need to do this, but we can. And we need to stop making excuses for why we shouldn't have to or how it's unnecessary, because that just holds us back. So there's only so much time, I think, that different ops will take up for us. We need to find new things to do, new things to fill our time. We're going to have to look at the work that we're not doing. Let's start with game days. Running these fire drills in a controlled environment so that when the actual thing happens at 3 a.m., we're prepared. Chaos engineering. Injecting faults into our systems and understanding how they behave. I know what you're thinking. Tom, how is this stuff new? I've read tons of blog posts on game days. Heck, Nora's going to talk about chaos engineering right after this. But I put these tasks in a category I like to call things I read about in blogs or hear in conference talks that other people are doing and I'm not. How many folks here are actively doing game days or chaos engineering? How many folks have done it more than once, more than that one time necessary to write a blog post about why people should work there? This is a chance for us to do work that we know we should be doing, that we want to be doing, but we can't find the time to prioritize. It's new to you, just as Thai food and disco is new to Captain America. It's something that has existed, but we just haven't had the time to experience yet. And that brings me to an emerging concept that we like to call FinDev. Write this one down. It's going to be one of the next portmanteaus in our profession. Cost. Cost becomes this first-class metric in the systems that we run. Every piece, every change to your system has a cost, whether it's positive or even negative. And the granularity of serverless billing makes tracking that cost far more possible than it was before. But cost isn't the only thing we care about. We care about revenue, too. You look at that chart. We ship some feature, okay? We've increased the cost of the system, but we've increased revenue. We've increased revenue enough that it covers the jump in cost and actually increases the profit margin for what we were making before. And that's because we built the right thing for our user. And our users want to use this. And that's what brings me to this. You're going to have to understand how your organization works, how it sustains itself, and what it values. And this is a bigger mindset shift than just functions as a service or event-driven architecture. I just work here won't cut it anymore. We've removed much of the infrastructure details so that you can focus on your unique problems. Your organization's unique problems probably do not include operating infrastructure. That is just a byproduct of being an organization in the 21st century. I want to briefly bring this back to Jeffrey Snover's talk. Once you know how your organization sustains itself and what it values, are you okay with that? Just because I look at serverless heavily through a business lens doesn't mean that the moral and ethical considerations go away. Perhaps being forced to understand this stuff is going to put these questions right in front of us. On the left, this is what we're mostly doing now. How do I transport some JSON from one API to another? but the right. You go serverless first. You're going to be asking, why did I transport some JSON from one API to another? And what is the value of actually doing that? That is the real mindset shift that serverless brings. Why did I build this, and what value does it actually create for people? I don't want to just operate systems anymore. That's okay if you do, I just don't. I didn't get into operations because I like engineering. I got into operations because I like solving problems, and I found technology gave me the tools to solve problems. You know, I see these like heated conversations like, oh, did you see the latest change to System D? Can you believe that? And I'm thinking to myself, I just don't care. And I like that serverless frees me from having to care about that stuff. I want to do something more each day. I want to find greater meaning in the work that I do. That's my user. I build things for them. My user gives my work meaning. And you might hear the term product, not project these days, but you don't have to work in a product company to adopt that mentality. Your coworker is your customer. This is ultimately a profession about serving people. What excites me the most about serverless is our responsibilities are no longer just about, you know, operating the levers of infrastructure. We add to it delivering value to our organizations and our users. That purpose has actually always been there, but has been abstracted away from us through layers of technology. By abstracting away the server, that purpose better returns to our focus. Thank you. If you like what I was talking about, and you're just kind of like, hey, his ideas intrigue me, and I wish to subscribe to his newsletter, yeah, I'll do you one better. I wrote like an ebook. You don't even ask for your email address. Just go download it. It's an 80-page long read for your ride home. Let me know what you think. Thank you.